Blog Talk Radio.
Everyone, and welcome to Chai Chat, and our subtitle is Creating New Worlds at Work. My name is Victoria Vettier. I'm an Enlightened Life Coach and Consultant, and my website and business is called Enlightened Life Coaching, and I'm here at the top of the morning doing the show with my great co-host, Mary Rockenstein. Mary, how are you? Tell people who you are.
Hi, Victoria. Hi, everyone. Yes, I am Mary Rockenstein, and my company is Leadership Edge Solutions. So I'm a general business consultant, but spend a lot of time, as Victoria does, in the world of coaching.
Absolutely. And Mary, I want to congratulate you on air. Your website came up recently. You've got a brand new website out there, and it looks beautiful. It's very nice. So I encourage everybody to go visit Leadership Edge, the Leadership Edge, and it's we've got a hot link on our show page always for both our sites. So go take a look at who we are and what we do. So here we are, and we're doing a couple of shows here in September. And we, in September, here in America and around the world, remember 9/11, and it's been 15 years since that earth-changing event. And it's hard to believe it's been 15 years, right, Mary?
It is. And, you know, the thing that comes to mind, top of mind when I think about that, Victoria, is that, you know, just as we did that day, we always have a choice in the work environment, which is really kind of the title and the content, the texture of the show today. We always have a choice between picking or choosing to go down a path of fear or a path of love. And I know that's near and dear to your heart as well.
It is. It's a foundational question. It's a foundational choice. And it pretty much, underlies everything we do, everything we create, and how it is that we are going to create life as we know it, coming from these two places. And we'll return to this question back at the end of the show when we ask you to do a home play, as we always do at the end of each show. So, yeah, it's a foundational question, and we want to talk about that today in honor of and respect for the memories and of course, in the occurrence, of the tragedies that occurred on 9/11 and 2001. And, you know, as it's been 15 years, but it, you know, I think all of you probably remember it as though it were yesterday, right, Mary?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, before I want to talk a little bit about 9/11, but before I do that, I want to mention something that I think it really, I think it is too a foundational piece, because I think it gets to the heart of really helping people understand that, again, the choice, fear, or love. And I'm going to attribute this to someone who probably some of the listeners may have never heard of, but he was pretty influential in my life when I studied him, and that's W. Edwards Deming. He's known as the father of total quality management, and he said way long ago that we need to seek first to understand and then to be understood. And again, he was applying it to statistical process control, et cetera, and those concepts, but it has a much broader meaning and a much broader reach, you know, than even that. And I still look at this as one of the biggest opportunities in business today, whether you're coping with a tragedy, something that, you know, that rose to the level of 9/11, or you're just having, you know, a disagreement, opinions, differing opinions, et cetera. But I really think if you're talking about fear and love, the root of that is seeking first to understand.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, and that goes to listening, you know, first.
Yeah.
The power of listening, and, you know, I've heard it said that's why we have two ears and one mouth, you know, so that
mm-hmm.
we can listen twice as much, you know, as we speak, and to listen first and to listen with an open heart and as much without preconception as possible. And that's, I think, the true meaning of understanding. We can't come to an understanding unless, you know, we try to have a blank slate going into it.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So, yeah.
Yeah,
so
very, very important. Yep.
Yeah. And I think, you know, even as we go back to that day, 15, it'll be 15 years ago here coming up on September 11th. And, you know, like anybody else, that was a defining moment for any of us, no matter where we were, whether we were working in business or, you know, Victoria, or you were coaching, and it doesn't matter where you were, that became a defining moment really for each of the generations. And I can remember, whether it was driving to work or going to the grocery store or even being at work, you know, people, after that tragedy, people just showed, in my opinion, extreme amounts of compassion and generosity to each other. And in a way, I remember thinking, oh, this is so sad, you know, that it takes something of this magnitude to bring us together and realize that, again, we always have a choice, right? We can always respond to each other out of fear, which is not usually very positive or constructive, or we can make the choice to respond to each other out of love. And it lasted for a very long time, you know, and here in Ohio, where we are located, you know, some of us, we may have had loved ones that were on one of the planes, certainly, or in one of the Twin Towers, but if we didn't, we were, you know, a little bit removed from that, but yet we still felt it, and we felt the impact, and we really pulled together, you know, I think, as a state, as a country, as a nation. So I don't know.
Yeah.
Again, you had a little bit different perspective on that, didn't you?
Well, you know, it depends upon which context, you know, we were in. Of course, you know, it unfolded as I was at home before I went in to see patients, but I was doing psychotherapy during that point in my career. And so, yes, I remember the first person that walked into my office afterwards. I remember all day, you know, basically anything that anyone had as their own personal issue. We went by the wayside in terms of coping with the immensity of the shock and horror that people felt that day. And so it was client after client after client that I was, you know, working with that day and working with them to help them to heal through their reactions.
Yeah.
And you were
working
in a larger context at that time, of course, in a company,
yeah.
Right?
I was.
Yeah.
I was working in the service industry. So, you know, we were trying to take care of each other as well as taking care of clients, and we had people that were, you know, in the air that day or were supposed to be flying, you know, to events that day. So it was,
well,
pretty strange situation all the way around.
Well, Mary, you made a really good point, and, you know, I'd want to put the question out there, you know, how bad does it get before we do good? I think that's an important question. It's kind of a shocking question to ask, maybe a little audacious, but I think it's an important question, and we're going to, you know, talk more as we go through the show here about these elements of doing good and the actual benefits of what it's like to put forth your compassionate foot, your altruistic heart, you know, and move into any situation in a more open, you know, service kind of oriented way.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting that you said that, because when I think back again to work environments, there were few and far between, but there were always those few people that just genuinely, you know, have good hearts, and they are always trying to do good things for other people. And you know, this is one of those life lessons that took me a long time to realize. But I think I had to read it multiple times from different authors and have different people tell me this. But, you know, in order to really become that person that, you know, starts with, you know, you seek first to understand and you look at, you know, love as a pathway first before fear, I think it also starts with self-love. You have to love yourself. And if you don't have that connection with yourself, I think it's very hard to sustain, you know, being that generous, compassionate, loving person and behaving that way and acting that way in the workplace versus acting out from fear. And I would just say one more thing too, Victoria. I think it goes back to another topic that you and I have spent time on in the past, and that is, you know, the path that we choose for our way of living. I think it's very connected to the be-do-have model versus the do-have-be. I think people that start from the be-do-have model of living really have that connection, and they understand the importance of that, whereas people that are starting from a pathway of do, I think it's much easier to get caught in the fear of things. I don't know what you would if you agree with that or not.
Absolutely. You know, because, you know, at core level, you know, I really do believe that for the most part, you know, while we could get into a big discussion of it, and there's, you know, evidence that we have this sort of, you know, survival mechanism that we're hardwired with, nonetheless, you know, we are sentient beings that have the ability to sort of rise above our survival instincts to, you know, understand ourselves in deep ways and to, you know, want to be, you know, our highest self. And I think that's what makes us, you know, sort of, you know, gives us the opportunity to make these choices about authenticity, about, you know, respecting ourselves and respecting other people, et cetera, et cetera. It all kind of comes from some of these foundational levels, which makes it important that we all do our self-development work, that we do our personal development, that we heal our wounds, because anyone who's working, you know, from a fear place, and we all do, I mean, this isn't judgmental, it's just noticing, comes from, you know, a place of not being, it comes from a wounded place. So it really bears mentioning that, you know, if you're somebody that, you know, sort of tends to react in fear a lot, it's real important, you know, to sort of do some personal development work and work on these things. And it's never done. I mean, you know, I'm constantly working on myself. Mary is, you know, we do this, especially if we're in the role of coach or, you know, trainer or, you know, in any way working with other people, we're trying to do that within ourselves as much as possible.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that has helped me a lot, it helped me on 9/11, and it's helped me in general in life, is, you know, I always tell people, you know, in leadership, we need to take the spotlight and shine it on others and away from ourselves. And I really think, you know, if we look for opportunities or ways, you know, to help others, and part of that is we have to keep our attitude in check. I remember another guy, again, during the period of 9/11, one of my coworkers came up to me, and he and I decided we wanted to do something positive as a result of this. So we put together a whole presentation for clients, for our coworkers, for anybody that it might help, to talk about, you know, just different aspects of what may have led up to 9/11, both from a religious and a historical standpoint. And it was really well received. And we put a lot of time into that, but that was a way, you know, for us to heal, because we looked at
it and
said, what can we do to help other people? You know, we could keep focusing on all of this, and it's just so negative and horrible, but let's find a way to help. So some of that, I think, is choosing, you know, your attitude and then just accepting that, you know, which we talked about in managing yourself in time, you know, on those broadcasts, you have to do your best every day and think about excellence, but at the same time, you have to understand that when different things come up in life, you know, when life deals you kind of lemons, make lemonade, but you can't always function at 100%. Sometimes 80% is the best that you can give that day, you know, and you have to be okay with that, because if not, you're going to go to a state of fear, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's easy to slip into, most definitely, and we'll, you know, kind of refer that back to that again in the home play. But I wondered if, can I share this this story with everybody? There's a good segue right now to talk about this. It's a Buddhist myth, and it's all about comparing supposedly lunch in heaven to lunch in hell. And it's the same setup, a big dining room, beautiful, both places, really delicious food, everything that you can imagine, all given to you. However, the forks in this dining hall are too long to eat with. It's impossible for anyone to feed themselves from their plate with this long fork. So what it looks like in hell is that people are living in eternal frustration and hunger with all this luscious food around and a fork that's too long for them to eat with. However, those who dwell in heaven simply smile because they use the long forks to feed each other. Scientific data suggests that compassion is the intelligent way. I love this myth. Because when you first hear it, you're struck with, oh, my goodness, you know, that would be really inconvenient, you know, to have an implement that you couldn't even eat with all this food. But again, if we feed each other, if we look to give and to offer, there is a law of giving and receiving, and everything works well at the luncheon in heaven, right?
That's
so
great. I love that.
Yeah, I like that story. And I happened to come across, I was preparing for today, I came across a really great post in the Huffington Post from July of 2012, and it's called 10 Reasons Why Compassion is Hot. Now, again, you know, it's a sexy title, but the point here really being that these, all of these, I'm going to go through them, Mary and I are going to discuss them a little bit here, are based on scientific research and actual, data gathering on how is it that compassion and enacting compassion really benefits everything, everyone, everywhere, every which way. Point number one is it just makes us happy. As happy as getting money, doing something good and feeling compassion for someone actually creates brain changes, endorphins in the pleasure centers of our brain are activated. And so brain imaging studies have actually measured that it is more effective to enter a state of compassion, makes us happy, and activates these brain centers. It's just as happy as it would be if you won the lottery, believe it or not. So that's pretty compelling, I think. And secondly, it makes us happier than buying things for ourselves to give or have compassion or extend to other people. So actually to give, and you can see probably a lot of people who are actually uncomfortable with receiving, but they're very, very happy to give because actually, again, this activates centers in our brain that are just good feeling and, bring us to a really, important emotional place to give.
Victoria, that can be anything.
Yeah, go ahead.
Going to grandma's house, for dinner, and she insists that you leave with something, right? Because she wants to give you something, either half the food or an apple or something like that, right?
Absolutely.
I'm just smiling because I remember working with someone years ago, and she was the epitome of giving. She would just literally give you anything. If you just happen to mention, oh, gosh, I need a box of Kleenexes. I got to go to the store. She'd come in with a box of Kleenexes. Here, take this.
Mm-hmm.
But it was incredible. And every day she was giving to somebody. She lived for that.
Yeah.
And she's still that way today. She's just a very, very giving person. So makes a huge
difference.
Well,
that lady really, really knew and connected with these 10 reasons.
She did.
Not that we
she
do
did.
This for these 10 reasons, but she lived
it.
Yeah,
she did.
Yeah. When you remember her, it's like it makes a point, to us. And that leads us to point number three. It makes us attractive. Studies have found that actually both genders, male and female, find people more attractive when they are seen as generous, when they are seen as compassionate, when they're seen as altruistic. Five, it spreads like wildfire. Helping is contagious. So when we help, we see other people helping. And I think you've all noticed that as you, sort of let somebody go in a car in front of you, turn into the lane you're in and you wait a second, you'll notice that within a street or two, the guy in front of you typically lets somebody in. So you'll notice that this spreads. It's just very sort of spiritually contagious to be generous and to be compassionate. It also uplifts everyone around us. So it's kind of like an aura, when we're in a good space and when we do something good, it actually permeates the space with something good for everybody else. So it uplifts everyone just to see an act of compassion or giving or, service.
Mm-hmm.
It also boosts our health and longevity, by the way. There are tons and tons and tons of studies, the brain stuff that I mentioned, but lots and lots of studies showing that people who are compassionate, giving, live longer and live better, happier lives. So there's just a plethora of research on this topic. It actually gets us out of a funk. It's an antidepressant. So as I mentioned before in point one, that there are brain studies that show that there are pleasure centers that are stimulated by compassion. If we are not in such a good place, one of the things to do is to extend and to look to volunteer or to help or to be of service. It will change our funk into something that feels good inside of us. It's also the most natural thing. Spiritual traditions that going back thousands and thousands of years, ancient texts, etc., have at their basic core the spiritual, do unto others and do good works, from your heart. This is a central tenet of every spiritual tradition, no matter what it is. To underscore the point that it's sort of a most natural thing. We're sort of wired this way at our deepest core. At point number nine, it gives us more time. Interestingly enough, we did some time management, and we debunked the time management thing and said that this is really about how we experience time. But when you are in the state of being compassionate or giving or of service, it actually expands time, once again, because it puts us in a transcendent, heart-centered space. So helping others actually helps us feel like we have more time. It's an interesting thing. It sort of slows things down, expands things, and puts us in a transcendent space. Plus, point number 10, it's just plain good for society, community, and the world around us. There are concentric circles of benefit and goodness that come out of any small act. So I like to think of this as, I call it pebble in the pond when I'm working with people. And, you know, it's like when you drop a pebble in the pond, there are concentric circles emanating from that of an energy signature that has to do with the shape and the size of that pebble. So when you do an act of kindness, know that it's pebble in the pond and you are emanating something good from that act and from within yourself to your entire world.
Yeah, I think one of the most important, they're all important, and that is a great list, Victoria. I wrote them all down myself as you were talking. Yeah, it's a great list. And I think, you know, one of the most important, and I've mentioned this frequently to other people, you know, in different various educational sessions and so forth, but, and it's the pebble in the pond piece, is that, you know, mm-hmm. when you do something good for someone else that's coming from a state of love and not, you know, of course not fear, it not only benefits the individual that you're doing it for and yourself, but anybody else that notices it. So when you talk about uplifting everyone around you, it really has health benefit for, or health benefits for everyone that may be, you know, just looking at it from a distance. And it also, I think one of the most important pieces, and you hit on this too, is it really helps set in motion that kind of pay it forward. You know, I let somebody in front of me, the guy behind me sees me doing that, he lets somebody in, you know. And that's all it takes. And can you imagine what the broadcast news would look like one night if, you know, if we had a lot of that to talk about, right?
Oh, absolutely. I remember a commercial. I won't mention the brand, but there was a commercial that was all about pay it forward, and there was no dialogue really until the, you know, promo part at the end for the product. But you saw people walking through life doing something good, one after the other, and the person, you know, just walked through, and each person did something good next and did something good next. And there were about, what, six or seven frames of that going on very quickly in this commercial. There was no dialogue. It was just visuals. It was very compelling. I mean, most of us probably remember this commercial, and I know that I'll never forget it. It was very compelling for me to see this, you know, in media land. And indeed, you know, not to sound woo-woo on everyone here, but the fact is there is an energetic signature. You do not live in a vacuum. You do not exist in a vacuum. You do not operate in a vacuum. So everything, every act, every thought, everything that you emanate has an impact. And again, we get back to the central choice. It can come from a loving place or a fearful place, which is often, you know, a delicate nuance. And I'll just sort of say that we're going to return to this, you know, in the home play. But you've got to get to know yourself and really where you're coming from in terms of knowing whether or not you're coming from one place or the other. But do understand that whatever happens, it is pebble in the pond. There is an impact. You know, I would bet in a workplace, you know, you could see this spread like wildfire, right, Mary?
Well, you can, and I think that's an important point to make, because the whole purpose of Chai Chat was to help people transform their worlds at work. And as you said, this is a choice. So maybe your workplace isn't functioning. Maybe it is functioning out of fear. And there are workplaces I am aware of that are functioning out of fear and not out of love. But again, all it takes is one pebble in the pond, you know, to start something. That's all it takes. So as we've talked about before, you really have to sit down and evaluate, you know, before you make the decision that, you know, this place is terrible, I'm going to leave. That is certainly a choice that you can make. But you could also make the choice to try to transform from where you stand. So pretty,
well, absolutely.
Pretty interesting
and
stuff.
Yeah, well, I would ask people to think about, you know, maybe look into, you know, the places that are the best places to work, et cetera, that have been, you know, rated and named and exonerated for being best places to work. In every case, you know for sure that those places are attempting to operationalize working from service and love,
yeah,
not from fear, competition, and any other, you know, kind of constricted energy.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, and, you know, Mary knows some of those places better than I do, but I can tell you that in every case, when you read the account of, you know, how the business operates, some of their operating, you know, their motto, their mission, the way that they deal with employees, the way that they deal with customers, et cetera, it all comes from this sort of, you know, heart-centered kind of, I would call it, you know, do
yeah.
good. Be good, be your best, give it your best shot, you know, places, you know, that they're coming from, and hence the whole, it raises the vibration of the entire organization.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So I'm guessing, as always, Victoria, you probably have a fun
yeah.
play for these folks this
well,
week,
I
right?
Do. Yeah, and I'm just going to suggest softly out there, you know, again, Sunday is the commemorative day of 9/11, so, you know, maybe even on that day especially, you know, think about this. But I'd like everybody to simply become aware of your choices, and the choice being, are you coming from fear or are you coming from love? And be aware of the choices that you're making, whether it's something you say, something you think, something you do, at work, in a work environment, at home, with your family, with your friends, you know, and everywhere, at the store, in your car as you go through traffic, et cetera, And this is, it's a personal kind of awareness. And, as I said, it's nuanced. And you really have to get honest with yourself. And, you know, and as we talked about authenticity, is this thought, is this action, is this decision, is this perception coming from a place of an open heart or a closed heart? Is it coming from a place of love or is it coming from a place of fear? And I would ask people to simply ratchet up their awareness, because this is the real personal part. This is the part that you're doing to benefit you and everyone around you. And shift, if you can, just a little bit more toward love. You know, sort of like a seesaw, a teeter-totter, okay? See if you can somehow shift just a little bit more toward coming into decisions, thoughts, perceptions from a place of openness, from a place of non-judgment, from a place of compassion, from a place of altruism and a loving space, if you possibly can. And awareness is the first step, because it can't happen unless you know what you're doing, unless you're aware
yeah.
that you're the thinker and you're the chooser, and either choice is yours. So that's the home play. What do you think?
Cool, cool, cool.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. So we'll be back.
Well, we're wrapping
in 2 weeks.
Up this one, and we will have the second half kind of this topic. We're going to stay sort of on message here for the second show in September. We're not going to, you know, kind of give it away right now, but we just kind of put the teaser out there that we'll have show two that relates to this topic in some way, and our second show in September, which is going to be on the 20th. Is that it?
20th. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Same time, same station, and we do hope that you know, all of you, as you go through your week, take some time to, you know, think and send out good thoughts and do as much self-healing as you can, because that's what makes us all better, right, Mary?
Absolutely.
All
so
right.
Have
a good week, everyone.
Weeks. Yeah.
We'll see you in 2 weeks. Take care. Bye bye.
Bye bye.